Julia Mocker. This is the extended podcast version of my conversation with pianist Simona Dinnerstein about her most recent recording, Mozart in Havana. It features his piano concertos number 21 and 23. I hope you enjoy it. Let's start off by just answering that question. What made you want to go to Cuba?
Well, it happened because I was invited to perform at a piano festival there that was organized by Solomon Mikofsky. He is a Cuban pianist, a piano teacher, who I studied with from when I was 9 until I graduated high school. He very strongly identified as a Cuban, and he actually had a lot of Cuban art in his piano studio on the walls. And he would tell me about his training and about the audiences in Cuba, how much they appreciated classical music and how cultured it was. And in 2013, he created this piano festival and invited me down. So when he invited me to finally go there, I was extremely eager to see what it was like. And it was just as amazing as he said, if not even more amazing.
Now, he was a Cuban Jew of Polish descent, and you're a Jewish girl from Brooklyn. Did that culture intertwine in any way? I know you made a point to mention that in your liner notes, and I was just wondering if that was significant in your experience with him or with the music that you studied together.
Well, I guess the point that I was trying to make is that all of these connections that we feel to music are all imagined. And that it doesn't matter where your background is from, you can relate to other musicians or to different composers from different backgrounds, no matter what your background is. We relate to the music of Mozart and Bach, and you know, we just create these imagined worlds for ourselves.
When you went to that piano festival in 2013, what was most inspiring about being part of that event?
I would say the audience. I mean, it was completely packed, and people are, you know, really amazing listeners there. I mean, very attentive, and, you know, they couldn't have been a warmer audience. And I found it just really incredible to walk around the streets and feel the atmosphere there and meet the people. I felt like I was entering into a world that had been hidden from us. It was almost like there's something about going there that is surreal, partially because of that hidden element, and also because you just see so many old buildings and old cars, and it's almost like it's in a different time. And yet it's so close to the United States. It's a very, very short flight from Miami to there.
Well, you returned in 2015 to perform with the Havana Lyceum Orchestra. What made you want to return?
Oh, I mean, after that first experience, I definitely wanted to go back. And Solomon invited me to go play the Mozart Concerto with the orchestra. And I thought, you know, it sounded great. I didn't know what their orchestra was going to be like. Frankly, you never know what an orchestra is going to be like, no matter where you're going. But I thought it would sound like it would be interesting to do it. And I got there, and I heard them rehearsing a Mozart overture. And they were just amazing. I mean, the sound was just fantastic. I mean, so beautiful. So they have a collective sound. So it was really inspiring and very exciting to play with them.
I know when the Minnesota Orchestra went to Cuba a few years ago, right after the travel ban was lifted, they went and worked with a number of young musicians, and they found that the conditions there were pretty challenging, and these kids were able to make some amazing music on very old instruments that were kind of falling apart. They had very few strings and things, and I know that you actually had to make this recording with donated strings and donated equipment. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. When I performed with them, I discovered that they they really didn't have access to strings and reeds. In fact, they were tuning their instruments very low so that they could preserve the strings so they wouldn't break. So when I went back to record, I asked a couple of friends of mine in the United States whether they might donate money to buy strings and reeds, and they did. And as a pianist, I have to say I did not realize how expensive strings are. It's really a pricey thing to get nice strings. And so buying it for the whole orchestra was a lot of money. It was an incredible donation. And the conductor said to me that the musicians in the orchestra had never had a complete new set of strings from one string company before. So I think that was really helpful for them in terms of their sound. What is surprising to me is that this orchestra has such an incredible sound. I mean, even, okay, they have beautiful strings on this recording, but frankly, they sounded like that before they had those strings. I mean, that's what's so striking.
I was curious, why was Mozart the composer that brought you together?
The Havana Lyceum Orchestra is affiliated with the Salzburg Mozarteum. And so they have a tradition of studying Mozart and playing Mozart, and they've gone to Salzburg and worked with the musicians there. So that was one reason, of course. And the other reason was that I've wanted to record these two concertos for quite some time, and they just were a perfect collaborator on it.
It's interesting that you mentioned that they had a hard time with both strings and reeds, because I was noticing how beautiful the wind instruments sounded on this piano concerto number 23 in A major on this recording. They really just had just such a warm quality and embraced the piano solo so beautifully.
Yeah, there are some really beautiful exchanges with them, like the end of the slow movement of the C major. There's a beautiful duet with the oboe and the piano. First the oboe, and then the flute joins in as well. I just felt that that came together so beautifully. I felt like we were really talking to each other. It was true chamber music.
Let's talk about the actual recording process, which happened over three long, sleepless nights. And first of all, I'm wondering why this was done in the middle of the night. Was that because of audio distractions or something?
Yes, absolutely. Because they do not have a studio there that's large enough for the orchestra to record in. So we had to use a church in Old Havana. And there's not a lot of sound insulation. You can really hear everything going on around you. There's a lot of action taking place in Havana during the day. I mean, there are these pedicabs with, you know, bicycles, and there are stray dogs, and I think at 10 p.m. every night, everybody watches the same soap opera, so you hear that coming out of everybody's homes. You know, there's people playing music and whatever. So we had to do it in the middle of the night to avoid all of those different sounds. And actually, even with that, we had security guards outside who were trying to make sure people didn't make noise outside of the church. And we had to turn the air conditioning off because that makes noise. So it was really hot. It was challenging. I'm a morning person. And so I was really worried about being alert at 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. But your body can do miracles when the adrenaline is going. So it worked.
It sounds like this was an experience that has not been replicated for you in other recording settings with other ensembles. Would that be true?
It was unique. I mean, I've had great experiences with all of my different recordings, but this was different in that there was a lot more time. We spent a great deal of time rehearsing before the recording started. I think we rehearsed for at least 12 hours before that, and we performed before it. And that kind of time, I never had that with a recording before, with an orchestra. And I felt that it just made us able to go even deeper into the music and to really bond with each other as musicians.
What did you learn about yourself from this experience?
I think that for me it was extremely inspiring to work with the players there and the conductor. And I had a very strong vision of how I wanted these pieces to sound. And I guess I learned that with enough practicing and enough rehearsing, that can actually happen. Like, it's possible for an orchestra and a pianist and a conductor to all, you know, work together to create a sort of unified depiction of a piece of music. I mean, I think that that's something that I always hoped to do, and I felt like that really happened with this recording.
I wonder what Mozart would have thought of this performance. I was just imagining him in Cuba.
I think he would have loved Cuba, actually. Mozart seemed like a person who liked to have fun and liked musical puns and camaraderie, and his music is so full of joy and life force, and that is something that is really true of Cuban musicians. I felt really moved by how seriously they all took the experience, how hard everybody worked, how the prime motivating factor of the whole experience was to create an ideal performance of the piece, to really line up what we heard inside of ourselves with what we produced, what our inner ear told us, and what happened actually in reality that our outer ear could hear. And I think that's just a really beautiful thing.
That was the extended conversation with Simona Dinnerstein as part of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode.